I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Back in the Bible's description of the Day of Atonement, the chief priest selected one unfortunate goat from the herd. Then he would symbolically heap upon it the sins, or scapes, of all the people before sending it out into the wilderness, where it would presumably be devoured by wild animals. And that's actually where we get the word scapegoat. And that's where we'll start, with the question still hanging in the air after the resignation of CIA Director George Tenet. What do you think? Is Tenet being sent into the wilderness symbolically carrying the sins of this administration on his back? Is he being made the scapegoat for intelligence failures that may have led to 9/11? Or for passing along bad information about Iraqi weapons of mass destruction? Or is he doing the honorable thing and accepting these responsibilities himself? We want to look ahead as well this hour, beyond questions of whether Tenet jumped or was pushed. What's the future of the intelligence community that he's leaving behind? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. George Tenet was, by most reports, respected and admired within the CIA. On a recent public appearance, he spoke of his own frustration at working with issues so secretive that he couldn't even tell people about the good things being done.
Everybody talks about military capability or law enforcement capability. Well, we sit behind the green door. And for the bang for the buck, the American taxpayer gets a hell of a lot for what we give them. And, you know, we ought to find a way to talk to the American people about it as well, because I think they'd be supportive.
But after questions over 9/11 and the war in Iraq, it's clear the administration was not so supportive of Mr. Tenet. Today, we're talking about the political implications of his resignation. Starting off the conversation this morning, Timothy Berger. He's a Washington correspondent for Time magazine. He's working on the story this morning and joining us on the line from his office in Washington. Hi, Tim.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm fine. What's the latest intelligence this morning?
The latest intelligence. Well, of course, the first thing everyone asks in Washington when someone says they're leaving a job, a political job, to spend more time with their family is, okay, what's the real reason? So people are still asking that, although obviously the emotions that Tenet had yesterday were genuine, as he sort of alluded to not having been able to spend a whole lot of time with his now 17-year-old son since the kid was in second grade.
Right.
So he's going to indeed enjoy spending time with his family. So far, it really does not look like he was pushed out, although there were clearly some tensions, not perhaps with President Bush personally, but others in the White House over serious problems that are fairly obvious with intelligence in the last 3 years.
Even if he wasn't pushed, it doesn't sound like or look like there were people begging him to stay.
Well, Bush may have said, well, I wish you'd stay through the election or the year or whatever. But he, a year ago, indeed persuaded Tenet not to resign, and this time didn't or wasn't able to. And, you know, I think everyone says on both sides that it's probably a political favor to Bush, whether or not Tenet intended it that way. I think he does have a good relationship with Bush and probably is glad to help him out a little bit, or at least not be a sea anchor for the president in the election.
Tim, it was Time magazine that first, I think, reported the story about the Intelligence Committee report that was and is due out at some point. I understand a copy of it is at CIA headquarters, though there's some questions about whether or not George Tenet himself ever saw it. But apparently this report is highly critical of the CIA. Are you any closer to knowing whether or not it was that report in particular which may have given him the impetus to resign yesterday?
I think that it's part of the atmospherics. And I'm initially told, and will double check, but still am ready to believe that Director Tenet hasn't actually read that report. And, you know, he's a pretty strong guy. He's been through so much already, you would wonder why one report would drive him out of office. This is going to be particularly stinging, however, because I gather it will be endorsed bipartisanly by the Senate Intelligence Committee. And it's so scathing that whatever is released publicly and the rest that's private is not going to paint a pretty picture. And as you mentioned, we reported a couple of weeks ago that this report was sort of causing even folks on the committee who had been sort of longtime Tenet supporters to really blanch and wince over the findings.
Jim, I'm going to let you get back to the phones. I want to thank you for being with us on the program this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Timothy Burgers, Washington correspondent for Time magazine. Let me introduce the guests I'll have with me for the balance of the hour. From WCPN in Cleveland, Ohio, Ted Gupp. He has written extensively about the intelligence community for both the Washington Post and Time magazine. He's the author of The Book of Honor, The Secret Lives and Deaths of CIA Operatives. Ted, good of you to join us.
Thank you.
And from NPR Studios in Washington, Judith Yaffe. She is a 20-year veteran of the CIA, where she was a senior analyst looking at Iran and Iraq and the Persian Gulf. She's currently a senior fellow at the National Defense University. Judith, thanks again for being with us.
I'm happy to be here.
Let me just hear from you to start, Judith, on the political side of the timing of the resignation. How are you making sense of that?
Well, the timing is interesting, but I think that we may be making too much of all this because of the results of the report, or taking the fall, you know, taking all the responsibility and saving the administration. Sometimes, Freud said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Tenet has always been a fairly straight shooter. He is an honest guy, and when he says he's got personal reasons, maybe we should think about that a few minutes. He has been through 7 extraordinarily hard years as DCI, and before that he worked a pretty hard shift when he was on the NSC and other committees. So I have to respect his reasons. Now, it's true, there's a lot of nastiness to come out, but you know, we're already pretty well familiar, I think, with a lot of the outlines of criticisms in these reports, especially the 9/11 Commission and the Senate Intelligence reports. Those aren't going to be a total mystery, and they don't just blame the CIA. Tenet is not the only person who's going to come under criticism for his performance at the head of the watch. All there right. are other organizations too.
But Ted, even if we take Mr. Tenet at his word that he is resigning for personal reasons, some of those personal reasons are the fact that he's been beaten up so badly over what the CIA's involvement has been over the past few years in both 9/11 and the war in Iraq.
I don't think there's any question about that. I think part of the key to understanding his resignation, and indeed central to understanding George Tenet, is to recognize that he is above all a team player. And that is both his strength and his weakness, I think. You saw that come out during the discussion of WMDs in Iraq, and I think that's what's motivating to large degrees the resignation now. That is, I think he recognizes that he is that his credibility is mortally wounded outside of Langley. Now, within Langley, he enjoys great support and affection and admiration from his own troops. He has always been extremely supportive of them and defensive of them. But outside Langley, on Capitol Hill and beyond, he is definitely wounded. I think he recognizes that, and I think he's enough of a team player that he doesn't really need a push. I think he is preemptively taking leave, and I think that's what's behind it.
But Ted, you were a long time in Washington, and the timing of anything that happens in that city, there's more to it than you know, sort of serendipity moments. Here we have the president making the announcement at the moment before he gets on a helicopter that puts him on an airplane that takes him out of the country for 3 days. I mean, am I reading too much into that to think that there was a certain amount of orchestration going on here?
You know, in ancient Greece, when the oracle would present an augury, you knew not to ignore it, but you didn't know how to interpret it. And that's always the business that we're in, like intelligence officers at the CIA. We don't have sufficient facts yet. My guess is that this was somewhat scripted in terms of timing. I don't disagree with Judith that personal reasons were probably behind this, but personal reasons include the degree to which he places the nation's well-being perhaps above his own career, and I think that is part of his personal portfolio. So there is some ambiguity in how one interprets it.
And Judith, I know that one of the aspects of intelligence that you've thought a lot about and written about is how it is used in forming policy. That's, I think, where Tenet got himself into hot water. And the interesting aspect of it is it's still too early for really any of us to know whose fault that is in terms of the way that intelligence information was given to the administration over weapons of mass destruction, and then the way that it was used. I mean, on one hand, you can say that was a political failing. On the other hand, you can say it was an intelligence failing. So when Tenet says, hey, I'm resigning, is he saying, yes, in fact, it was our fault?
I hope not. That's something which has always gotten right to the core of, you know, 20 years of being an intelligence analyst. When people talk about intelligence, especially outside the Beltway, even inside, they like to think, well, it's always the CIA and they take the hits. I'd like to remind you that the CIA did have it right on a few things, including the source of the intelligence reports on several key issues that are debated now. For example, Iraq's linkages with terrorism, Al-Qaeda, and Osama bin Laden. The WMD information, weapons of mass destruction. Now, it's true. I think that there was an analytic, major analytic error in the WMD in Iraq. On the other hand, the agency was true on the reliability of information involving a lot of these issues and warning of sources not to be given a lot of credibility. Intelligence isn't just the product of the CIA or the intelligence community, unfortunately. I think you have to look broader than that. And I'm hoping that these intelligence reports that are about to be released will do that. Because intelligence shouldn't influence. It would be nice to think that it helped to shape policy, certainly that it helped to shape some of the options under consideration. The reality, in my experience, has been that it's a very different affair, at least in the past couple of years.
And Ted, the leaks on these committee reports are not encouraging for what they're purported to be saying about the CIA and the information that was given to the administration. When Judith talks about, you know, the focus being perhaps too much on that and not on the way it's politically exploited, do you agree with her?
Well, I do and I don't. Let's point out, first of all, that the intelligence community is just that, a community of 15 different entities, of which the CIA is only one. Others contributed mightily to where we are in Iraq and the world today. And the bulk of those, even though George Tenet enjoys the title of Director Central Intelligence, the truth is that the bulk of those are under sway of the Pentagon and oftentimes reflect and bear the imprint of the Pentagon's own agenda. I think that the record of the agency in these matters is not good, but I think it would be very foolish to hold them singly accountable for where we are today.
And so when you look at the political implications, Tim Berger was just saying that this, in fact, may work in favor of the president. Do you agree with that?
I think I do not agree with it. I think that this will have very little political impact whatsoever. I mean, the person who is replacing him, John McLaughlin, as the interim director, is very much in the mold of George Tenet. I mean, he's been there for a very long period of time. It does not represent a significant break in the way that things are likely to be done. And there's no distancing here from the current record. And I think it is only in the distancing from the past and a break with the past that one is likely to get political advantage. I don't see that being attained by this resignation.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners. Was Tenet pushed? Did he jump? Does it matter? Is it for better or worse? I mean, it is, I should say, for better or worse, a key resignation. What about the political impact? Will it be quite small, or do you think that this is something that will either help or hinder the Bush administration in the months leading up to the election? It'll certainly be seen through that prism. Our number's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. On this program, we're taking a look back and a listen in on the kind of pressure that was on CIA Director George Tenet. He announced his resignation yesterday, saying it was for personal reasons. He had certainly been through some professional meat grinders, though. One that a lot of people watched happened in mid-April when the Director of Central Intelligence appeared before the 9/11 Commission hearing. You might remember that exchange between George Tenet and Timothy J. Romer when they were talking about the PDB, the Presidential Daily Briefing, that contained information about al-Qaeda, which was or was not given on August 6, 2001. Let's just remind ourselves of the tone of that by listening in again.
Okay, I'm just confused. You see him on August 6th with the PDB.
No, I do not, sir. I'm not there.
Okay, you're not there. When do you see him in August?
I don't believe I do.
You don't see the President of the United States once in the month of August?
He's in Texas, and I'm either here or on leave for some of that time, so I'm not here.
So who's briefing him on the PDBs?
The briefer himself. We have a presidential briefer.
So, but you never get on the phone or in any kind of conference with him to talk at this level of high chatter and huge warnings during the spring and summer to talk to him through the whole month of August?
We talk to him directly throughout the spring and early summer almost every day.
But not in August.
In this time period, I'm not talking to him, no.
Does he ever say to Dr. Rice or somebody else, I want to talk to Tenet? Tenet is a guy that knows this situation, has been briefing me all through the spring and the summer. Tenet understands this stuff. His hair's been on fire. He's been worried about this stuff. Is that ever asked, or are you ever called on to?
I don't have a recollection of being called, Mr. Romer, but I'm sure that if I wanted to make a phone call because I had my hair on fire, I would have picked up the phone and talked to the president.
He's just never made.
No.
That from the 9/11 Commission hearings in mid-April, the director of the CIA, George Tenet, answering questions. There with me on the program, Ted Gupp, author of The Book of Honor, The Secret Lives and Deaths of CIA Operatives. He's a professor of journalism at Case Western Reserve University. And Judith Yaffe is also with us. She's a former CIA senior analyst and senior fellow at the National Defense University. Ted Gupp, let me just start with you on this. I'm sure you were watching or had a chance after the fact to watch that. Was that a moment when perhaps the first parts of the decision of Mr. Tenet to say, you know, I just don't want to go through this anymore may have been sown, or did it happen long before that?
I think it was a very dramatic moment, and I think the drama of it transcended the actual information embedded in it. That is, I don't think whether Tenet was in direct contact with Bush during that, the president during that period or not, made any difference, because the director of Central Intelligence, Tenet, did not have the intel to ward off or thwart 9/11 anyhow. But it did play as a very dramatic moment. There's no question about it. I think there were other more damaging moments in that general period. And if I can point to one, it was a speech that he gave at Georgetown University, where he said that he never claimed that Iraq posed an imminent threat to the United States. The use of that word imminent he keyed on. And one can only remember in February of 2003 when he was sitting behind Colin Powell, Secretary of State, as Colin Powell presented a view of Iraq as a very chilling threat to the United States. And that kind of word splicing, I think, damaged Tenet even more than the presentation to which you refer to before the 9/11 Commission.
Judith, what do you think?
I think Ted's got it right. I was also impressed by that Georgetown speech. A lot of it was personal and emotional, and who said eminent and who said what. But, you know, he's going to be linked in our minds with that image of sitting behind Colin Powell at the UN and with saying, you know, yeah, we got the information, Mr. President, it's a slam dunk. And in a way, that's unfortunate, but there it is. I mean, he is, you know, linked to those, to being close to the center, to supporting the administration's policies. But that doesn't mean necessarily that all intelligence was shaped. He's got a lot of things to answer for, but he also did some things, you know, I think well.
But you see, the funny thing is, Judith, that he was either requested to take this very public position by this particular administration, or he chose to do that. But it is kind of unusual to see someone in that or taking that high a profile position who's in charge of the CIA.
Not necessarily. Think back to Bill Casey under Ronald Reagan. There have been other historical examples. Again, if look at who is a DCI, who is picked. If it's someone from the inside, like Richard Helms and Richard Nixon, Nixon picked the best professional and he hated him because Helms was so smart. Smarter than Richard Nixon, maybe. On the other hand, you had Bill Casey, an outsider, but a best friend of the president, who took the agency too close, in my opinion. I think a lot of other professionals as well.
Right.
Should the CIA be sitting at the table where the decisions are being made? Should it have a voice? No, it shouldn't. But there, depending on the relationship between the head of the community and the head of the government, You can get too close, or you can be too far away. This is, you know, there's not a compromising way to go here.
All right, let's hear from briefly, Ted. I want to get to some of our callers, but go ahead.
Well, the other thing is that Tenet kept insisting that the CIA flagged the ambiguity of this situation, citing, for example, the NIE, the National Intelligence Estimates. But there was nothing ambiguous about his sitting there at the UN, and that certainly trumped any ambiguity in the NIE. Nuance was lost.
1-800-423-8255. Yeah. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK. So let's go first to Northborough, Massachusetts. Bill's with us. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm getting sick and tired of hearing people who are team players complimented for being team players. The problem with this administration is the fact that there are too many team players and not enough individuals. And by individuals, I mean people who have enough guts, like, say, General Shinseki, to say, look, this is the way it is.
So in context of the director of Central Intelligence, are you saying that George Tenet should have resigned a long time ago?
He should have resigned a long time ago. I don't deny that he did some good things. That does not negate the fact that he dropped the ball big time and more than once, again and again and again, and all because, among other things, he was too cowardly to be an individual and too eager to be a team player.
I want to check that with Judith, if you don't mind, Bill, because I don't know whether or not, Judith, someone in Tenet's position has that choice. I mean, if he went to the president 2 months after 9/11 and said, we should have known, we could have done better, I'm going to resign, and the president said, don't you dare right now. Who's making that call?
You know, the caller has really struck a very important point. The system does not encourage plain speaking or independent thinking. The intelligence system can be distorted to the point where if consensus is the only thing that matters, and that consensus should be shaped by what the administration wants, sometimes that's called politicization, then we have a major problem. I think that very often there is a tendency by many who get close to the or part of the inner circle to want to serve that. Now, this is not just Tenet's problem. At the end of the day, there are other officials who went along with what the administration wanted, regardless of what might have been their better judgment. For example, Colin Powell, in the end, despite his reservations, also was a good soldier and a team player. So let's not just hang one person. It is a problem. And again, if you want to be heard in the White House, Tenet's feeling may have been that we got to be careful how we say what we say, or otherwise, you know, we won't have a place or an influence. We won't be read at all. And that has happened.
1-800-423-8255. Next to Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. And Corey's joining us. Hi, Corey.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. My question is how the panelists today think the resignation of Mr. Tenet's going to play out in the political campaign.
Is it going to help or is it going to hurt the president? Why don't we start, Ted, with you on that?
I think it's going to be largely neutral. I don't see him getting any chits from the loss of Tenet. The conventional wisdom now is that he's not going to attempt to replace him, that he's going to allow McLaughlin to be there until after the election. The sweeping reforms that will have to come in the intelligence community structurally and in terms of mission orientation are going to come after the election. My guess is that this resignation will be nothing but a blip in terms of the political landscape.
Okay, but the people who are looking at this with a different perspective, Ted, are saying that this is an administration that is determined not to admit any error, any defeat, any wrongdoing. And so when you have someone of Tenet's profile resigning, whether he says it's for personal reasons or not, people are going to interpret this as, aha, a crack in the armor.
They may, but I have to point out that there was nothing in what Tenet said, either publicly or to his own troops at Langley, that suggested for 1 minute that he was owning up to the magnitude of the intelligence failures over which he presided. Yes, he referred to failures, but it was not at the catastrophic level that we witnessed. I don't think anyone in the administration at that level has owned up, and unless and until that happened, I don't see political advantage being gained from it.
Judith?
Yeah, I tend to agree with much of what Ted said. the blame for a lot of this is going to have to lie elsewhere. I'd be much more impressed if there was, say, a senior Pentagon resignation over some of these issues or for a health reason rather than George Tenet's. Mm-hmm. I don't think George Tenet's resignation will play a big factor, but it highlights issues that are going to come up in the debate in terms of how did you receive intelligence, who told you what, and why did you choose to believe what you did, even when you were warned that it might not be the best information. Those are the critical questions. And Tenet's resignation doesn't answer those, solve those, or take all the blame for those.
All right. Corey, let me come back to you 5 months from now. You're going to be close to the ballot box yourself. What do you think? Do you think that this is going to make much of a difference at that time?
I don't know. My answer would be it's too soon to tell. But so I don't know.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Nice to have you on the program. 1-800-423-8255. To Cambridge, Massachusetts. Alice is with us. Hi, Alice.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you. I would like to know what sort of an excuse me, I have a cold. What sort of an investigation would have to be launched in order for the American public to have a decent idea of what the truth is in this matter?
Truth is in what particular area? I mean, we're still waiting for word from the 9/11 Commission. We're waiting for word on.
Well, let's say that if there were to be an investigation launched on what's behind his resignation.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that the idea would be to find out who else is behind his resignation. And as you have suggested, the problems go higher than just Tenet and beyond Tenet. But in order for the American public to have enough intelligence or enough facts that are accurate to vote intelligently, they have to know what truth is. And if truth can be hidden and disguised and turn out to be propaganda, how is the American public supposed to know what is truth?
I'm going to ask Ted to help you out on this one, Alice, because he had years as an investigative reporter in Washington. And I'm going to, clearly, Ted, we're early on asking these questions, but will the answers be there?
Well, with all respect to the caller, my sense is that the resignation is of great significance in terms of the life of George Tenet, but of very small significance in terms of the life of American intelligence and the intelligence community and the political landscape. And I don't think it warrants an investigation into why he resigned. I think that's frankly a relatively petty issue. The big questions are the questions before the 9/11 Commission. The big questions are we safer today? Are the actions we've taken contributing to our enhanced safety or to a deteriorating situation? I mean, those are the big questions that we're gnawing at, and those questions we must get an answer for if we are to have a political process that's meaningful. So to that degree, I agree completely with the caller.
Could I add something there, Dick?
Yeah.
And that is that there already is in process machinery to deal with this kind of investigation. There are at least, four or five commissions, committees in Congress that are looking at different aspects. But I think it's the Intelligence Committee which is going to look at. Now, there was an attempt by the administration to try to narrow what they would look at. But the examination was supposed to be on the information dealing with WMD and Iraq and the terrorism issues. The administration tried to narrow it to just look at weapons of mass destruction information to do with Iraq, Iran, North Korea. But the real issue is to look at sources of intelligence and how they weigh these things. And that's looking at CIA, DIA, Intelligence and Research Bureau and State, and in the Pentagon, the group that worked for the Office of the Secretary of Defense, the policymaking people who had their own Office of Special Plans, it was called, which was also producing intelligence. And I believe that was separate from anything the intelligence community had a handle on and had its own special access to the White House to give them their version of what the truth was. That's the kind of investigation that would answer your caller's concerns, and not just was Tenet pushed or not. I think it's the other issue that she's quite correct in pointing out.
All right, Alice, thanks for that. Let's go straight along to Framingham, Massachusetts. Mike's joining us now. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. My comment is, or my opinion, is that I think George Tenet's resignation does, and I think will, and should play a big part in the political campaign that's going on right now.
Why? And in what way?
In what way? Well, there are these reports that are due to come out, and we've already got a sneak peek at them from some comments that have been made that they are not good. that they really put negative light on him. So it's sort of like he's sneaking out the back door before, you know, his tardy slip is given to him. And I think that he and the president and the rest of this our administration all played a part in this whole charade. And it's as if now he's just washing his hands of it and ducking out the back door. And I think that should be made that should be brought forward, and they should pound that point home, because I think it's legitimate. And I think and that's basically it.
No, I you know, it's a really interesting way of trying to understand this. And Judith, let me come back to you on this,
yeah,
because again, it brings up that mushy area of who takes political responsibilities for failings of intelligence.
Well, the commission is going to, you know, it's not just the CIA that's going to take a lot of blame, and rightly so, but where was the FBI? Remember, they're going to come in for a lot of criticism, and you're not going to get Louis free, because he resigned how long ago? And it was on his watch that most of these errors occurred. So it's not just George Tenet that's got to answer for a lot of these things, and you're not going to be able to punish him, perhaps, except to damage his reputation, which I think being a Greek will hurt him. But there are others who are going to escape. I would look to those who are, you know, who are still left. And there's a lot of people who have to answer for things, but just don't look to hang. You know, I'm not defending Tenet, except to say, if you think that he's escaping, look to see who else has jumped ship already.
All right, and Mike, I think what we'll do is continue on after the break with the other part of your question about how this plays out politically in the months and perhaps even the years ahead. We have already heard the Democratic candidate John Kerry saying that this is once again an opportunity for a reevaluation of the structure of the American intelligence community. One of his suggestions is the idea of a cabinet-level secretary who's in charge of both domestic and overseas intelligence. Questions and criticisms about that, but let's take a look at it from that perspective when we're back. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. What happens if we, just for a moment, depoliticize the question of George Tenet's resignation as director of the Central Intelligence Agency and take a look at what it means for the future of the intelligence community? Certainly that was something that was discussed at some length before the 9/11 Commission, and there are political thinkers and those in the intelligence community who are saying that 9/11 and the events after that time have shown just how much the intelligence agencies need to be brought into this particular millennium. What are your thoughts about that? Let's take our next call from Apex, North Carolina. Britt's with us on the phone. Hi, Britt.
Good morning, Dick. I appreciate your show. I'm an avid listener of Connection. My question is that with the resignation of Tenet, what impact or what effect will that have on any further investigations and his inability to comment or take some ownership as to what's happening? Again, I'm not trying to single him out, as y'all said before. Others have left.
Do you mean, Britt, in terms of what's his role in figuring out where the investigations go from here, whether or not because of some kind of paper that he might have to sign, he has to disappear with a zipper on his lip? I'm not quite sure what you're asking here.
That, but I guess will he be restricted in any way as to what he can comment on if called upon to comment on further investigations down the road?
Yeah, okay. On investigations and on, you know, what needs to be fixed. Judith, do you want to start on that?
Yeah, you sign a secrecy agreement when you come into the agency, and that's good for life. I've left the agency, and yet I am bound to get my anything I want to write or publish cleared to make sure I don't divulge any classified information. not for my attitudes or ideas, but purely from an informational point of view. But, you know, Tenet, like anybody else who enters, would have to sign an agreement like that. Spies are not supposed to go around telling a lot of secrets after they resign because they're not there anymore. I think he will be bound for life not to reveal many of the things that he was a part of. Now, he can testify, you know, on closed-door hearings, but just because he's left the agency, that doesn't give him carte blanche to say and do whatever he wants.
I remember him speaking at the 9/11 Commission hearing, though, Judith, when he was talking about the plumbing. He said, it's not sexy, but you got to pay attention to the plumbing. And I think that he probably ruffled a few feathers on the political side by saying, you know, even if I get what I need, it's going to take me 5 years to get this particular agency up to the speed where it should be operating.
He was talking especially about rebuilding the clandestine services and how long it takes to recruit and train officers to prepare them to do that kind of work. And he's right. It's not something which happens overnight. You don't go out and say, let's recruit 100 people and have them on board 2 weeks from now. The CIA is not General Motors or, you know, a steel plant or whatever.
But Ted, does that mean that Tenet's resignation, coming as it does in such a political time, I understand, you know, you're drawn always to the politics like a bug to a light, but if you look at it without the politics there, is it a moment, is it an opportunity to say, look, Mueller's new at the FBI, there's nobody with any baggage anymore at the CIA, now is the time to, you know, shake the dice a little bit and see how these two agencies can be reorganized?
Well, I think that there's not only a chance or an opportunity, there's an obligation. If we miss this obligation, I think we will regret it for a very long time to come. I mean, I don't think there's much disagreement that we need fundamental restructuring. The precise direction of that restructuring is in dispute. But, for example, it's clear excuse me, that George Tenet, while he is in name the Director of Central Intelligence, does not control the intelligence community or oversee it, and nor have any of his predecessors. That is a structural defect that has to be addressed. And I think one of the fundamental questions that's going to emerge from this debate is the degree to which systemic change can control strong personalities. You can change names, you can rearrange the furniture, but if the systemic changes are not deeply enough embedded that it alters the culture fundamentally and prevents these super strong personalities from taking control of it, then the systemic changes will not really have the desired effect. But yes, this is a time in history to fundamentally address this question.
And the idea of putting one person, Judith, in charge of both intelligence agencies, or at least elevating that to a cabinet-level position, is that the right or wrong direction?
I don't like either one of those issues. First of all, the FBI has a different mission from the CIA. CIA is supposed to collect information overseas, be proactive.
And operate outside the law. That's the other thing that separates the two. The FBI is bound by the law that the CIA is not.
They're supposed to obey the law within the United States, and they're not supposed to operate within the United States. That's the charter.
Right.
And when presidents have tried to use them for that, they've had their hands slapped. Correctly so. What I'm trying to say is that the FBI's mission is to collect evidence, to prepare, to use in a court of law. Whether they go outside the law or not, I will leave that to you to make any statements you want. I'm simply saying different missions, different responsibilities. They need to cooperate more, but I'm not sure putting them under one hat solves anything. I think the Scowcroft Commission had a better fix, which was to create a real Director of Central Intelligence, separate him from the CIA, have a separate CIA director, but give that overall director, DCI, control of intelligence at the Pentagon, more control over INR, over the 15 different elements that comprise the intelligence community. And I'm not happy with allowing ad hoc groups to come up because an administration wants to get out to prove its own point. One other thing, I don't think an intelligence officer or a head of an FBI belongs in the cabinet. That gives them a kind of power that really belongs to politicals. You might also want to think about this. The FBI director is appointed, I believe, now for a 10-year term. That, I think, was intended to a great extent to depoliticize that appointment and to give some stability. Well, think about that for your DCI and or your CIA head. Maybe a 10-year term is a good idea because it would take them out of that political ring that does get them into trouble, or you know, brings them too close to the flame and they get burned.
Now you two both know a lot more about this than I do, but I have to tell you, during the 9/11 Commission hearings, just amazed to listen to the testimony describing the number of different intelligence agencies that existed at the Pentagon and the National Security Administration. I mean, as Judith was saying, Ted, 15 of them. Is that what you mean when you're saying that things are getting a little bit out of control?
Well, it's like herding quail, you know. These organizations are very independent-minded, and they're very distinct culturally. The National Security Agency, the intelligence organizations within the military service branches, the CIA, these all have distinctive cultures, deeply embedded historical rivalries in many cases, and you need someone, I think, that has control over it. And I tend to agree with Judith that the person wearing the hat of Director Central Intelligence should probably not be the same person who's running the CIA, because you're talking about a major job responsibility right there at Langley. And someone who has the overview responsibility should not be singly wedded by priority to the CIA, which they would be running on a day-to-day basis. So I do think that those should be separate positions.
If I could also just add one more point of information.
Yeah.
In my experience, and I've written a lot of estimates in my time and other stuff, there are really only four senior agencies that play a real role at the table when it comes down to a vote, unless there's some special interest that has to be acknowledged, say, by Commerce or whatever. But it's the DIA, CIA, INR at State, and NSA. That in the end, those are your senior services for the coordination, which doesn't mean that, you know, Army intelligence can't take a dissent, but they are the more senior services. I would just have one other thing to chew on, and I'd be interested in Ted's view. The tendency, there's always a reorganization after major upheavals such as we're going through now. I live personally through three or four of them, and they can be really devastating or good. But my point would be is that I think the tendency the past several years has been to go create a special center around every problem. Got a problem with terrorism, special center. Counterintelligence, special center. Iraq has become a special center. I think that it tends to take out a lot of expertise. For example, proliferation is a special center, and you don't have them coming together in any one place to share what the regional specialists know, what the technical specialists know,
well,
and how
that,
to put it all
together.
That's
the point, isn't it, Ted, that it speaks to a lack of trust in the equipment or the organization or the talent within State, within Pentagon, within the organizations that are supposed to be in place to deal with those questions.
Well, it does, but it also speaks to a desire to integrate more fully the intelligence and the expertise that you have. And ironically, sometimes in the move to integrate it by creating up these centers, you further balkanize it. That's one of the great ironies of these restructures if they're not done correctly.
Right. Let's go back to the lines, to Garner, North Carolina, and Mark's joining us now. Mark, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Dick. I just wanted to ask your guests, you know, there seems to be one line of thought that says our intelligence agencies are not allowed to function. They've actually been hamstrung. And I'm interested in their comments on that. You know, you talk about political implications. It seems like today you only think there are political implications for the Bush administration. But it seems to me if the line of thought I'm talking about is correct, then it goes back to administrations that weren't necessarily Republican.
Right.
You know, are our intelligence agencies allowed to function today, to get down, roll their sleeves up, and do the job that they need to do to prevent?
No, it's a great straightforward question. Yeah. Judith, you're in touch with people who are still on the inside. What would you say to Mark?
It's a great question, and I can only answer from my personal experiences that I served under Republican and Democratic administrations, and I always felt myself extraordinarily lucky that my I was never told what to write. I was told, here's an issue that needs to be dealt with, but I was allowed to come to my own judgments. I think the intelligence community has been allowed to function. The question is, hamstrung by a lot of silly requests, not being trusted by the administration. I think the real issue is, you can produce the best intelligence in the world, but if the administration doesn't want to listen, then at the end of the day, you know, just what have you been able to accomplish? And that's the real frustration. Not that you're not allowed to work. The fact that at the end of the day that nobody cares what you said. Again, when I served, people cared, and I felt that we had an administration that really valued. And that was, you know, those times I'm afraid, and I'm hoping temporarily, are gone.
And probably fair to say, Ted, that those times began to change, not under this administration, but under the Clinton administration, when so many cuts were handed to the CIA.
This is a bipartisan issue, but I think it's important also to stress that the agency and other intelligence communities entities have been very quick to blame others, budget cuts, personnel cuts, et cetera, without reflecting on the fact that if they had screamed a little louder and had better intelligence to support higher budgets and greater investments in the clandestine service, they might have fared better on Capitol Hill. There is enough complicity to go around for everyone on this issue.
Yeah, Ted's got that right. Unfortunately, you know.
But that's what Tennant was saying in the clip earlier, Judith, that life behind the green door means you don't get to make your case publicly.
And that's the point I wanted to make, that you don't, that all of this has to be done behind that green door. You can't go out in public and whine about it. That's the fact of being in a clandestine service.
John Edward McLaughlin doesn't strike me as the sort of person who's going to be any more or even as public as Tennant. Judith, what do you know the man?
Yes, I do. He's a great person. He is not a clone of Tennant. I hate to see that. He is a person in his own right, but his style is different. He's not going to be necessarily, you know, let's sit around and talk about sports and tell a few jokes. He is a very serious person, and I think part of his success over the years has been in his, what I have to say is understatement. Again, people might not like to hear it. He's not forceful. He's not a screamer. But he's somebody that I would have a lot of trust in to be there while this sorts itself out, because decisions are going to be made that he's not going to have any control over in terms of just the reorganization and all those issues. And to do a preemptive organization, which many people have done, including Tennant, doesn't solve the problem. But, you know, he's a good guy.
All right, Judith, thanks a lot for being with us on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Judith Yaffe is a senior fellow at the National Defense University and a 20-year veteran of the CIA. Ted Gupp, nice to have you back on the program. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Ted is author of The Book of Honor, The Secret Lives and Deaths of CIA Operatives. And earlier in the program, we talked with Tim Berger, Washington correspondent for Time magazine. Our program is produced by Anne-Marie Dorning, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenelosa, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Special thanks today to Glenn Alexander, John Hoder, Darren Minugian, Brian Myers, and Carl Volker. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.